Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Global City Mission Podcast. My name is Joey. I'm the Director of Mobilization, and I'm in Atlanta. And as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Mr. Chris Marsden, our Director of Operations, who's based in Orlando. And today, we have a special guest with us. Mr. Aaron Bourne is joining us. Aaron is on staff at Victory Church. Almost said it again. Victory Church here in Atlanta with me. They're a multi-site church. They've got a lot of great things going on, and he's leading a very unique initiative there at the church and kind of taking a new role. And so I'm really excited to have him with us today, sharing a little bit about his heart, what they're doing, and hopefully we can all learn together. But first, before we get too far into this, Aaron is a brand new board member. He's come on to our executive board here at the Global City. So we want to kind of give a little understanding of who you are and why you decided to join this crazy thing called Global City Mission. So give us a little bit of your background and kind of how you came to be on our team.
Yeah, thanks, Joey. Thanks, Chris. Glad to be with you guys today. So to me, it feels like a sort of a God thing, absolutely, that that I ended up connect with you guys. So Dr. Jared Looney reached out to me, found out that there's a lot of symmetry in what I was doing, what GCMI does. And Victory has a heart. So it's really difficult for me to talk about my vision for ministry without talking about what Victory does. Victory is a church of 145 different people groups. We're about 33 years old, located, like you said, four different campuses across the metro Atlanta area, and then also online campus as well. And now most recently, house churches. And we'll get to that in more in a minute. But we went through a transition about 3 years ago where our founding pastor is still on staff, but he has handed the senior pastor role over to Johnson Bowie, who's our senior pastor. And Johnson really came into it with this dream that God had given him for us to really be more missional as a church, to reach 100,000 people through Victory environments and 900,000 people through Victory influence environments, which means basically we're going to have to send a lot of people out and let go of a lot of things and give away everything we have. And so that's really the heart behind everything. And we realized that the model of how we were doing church wasn't really going to work. We were going to have to, you know, rediscover how to do this, basically. Where my story intersects with Victories and now GCMI is my parents were missionaries, church planners, grew up in multicultural church my whole life, have a multiracial family. I love the way the kingdom is supposed to look. I love the diversity that the church is supposed to embrace. And Atlanta is that city.
Absolutely.
And so it's one of our four pillars for Victory. We have reconciling cultures, building families, impacting nations, and transforming communities is what Victory is about. And so when I got to hear about the heart and vision of our Global City Mission, I was like, we're like the same people. So it's like, it's a go figure. Like, I don't have to think any differently. I don't have to put on a different hat. Like, this is what I do all day long, you know? Yeah. So I'm going to learn from you guys. Hopefully I'll be able to help you guys as well. And to me, it just was such a beautiful mix. I couldn't have drawn up a better connection to partner with. So I'm excited to be a part of this and excited to talk about what we're doing and how it plays into what GCMI is doing.
Yeah. Awesome. So real quickly, I know, say your title again, but then you were like a guy, cause I love your story. You're like a guy like on a crew, right? You were just helping and then kind of came on staff. Right? Am I right about that?
My story is kind of crazy. So I was not following Jesus for my 20s. I went to the Marines, came home, ran nightclubs for 10 years, bars.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Ran my own security team. End up coming back to my faith, rediscovering Jesus, recommitting my life to Jesus. And he called me to ministry like immediately. Started doing missions trips and everything. I thought I was going to be a missions pastor. And I ended up coming on staff at Victory as the head of security for one of our locations. And then 90 days later, I'm having conversations about men's ministry. I end up becoming the men's pastor of the church. I was, you know, working full time, going to Bible school at night, all that sort of thing. It's so funny how it even happened. I was so new on staff at the time. Some of the leadership team didn't even know that I was on staff. And they're like, so what do you do? for a living. I'm like, well, I actually work here. He's like, oh, we just got back from vacation. We had no idea. So it was actually funny how I came on staff, but I was so inclined to say no to come on staff. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to go back into security. I've done that off and on over the last, almost my adult life. God, you called me to ministry. This is wrong. And yeah. I had no idea that I was going to end up doing that. So I ended up starting the men's ministry of Victory. I did that for 7 years. And then this last November, I officially transitioned out of that role to become the lead pastor over house churches. So all that means is I guess I'm going first. So I get to be on the lead team and help plan that out and kind of help collaborate with what that looks like in a traditional model mega church. And how we implement that piece. So, yeah.
And that is you, right? You guys are a traditional model kind of church. Your Sunday mornings look like a lot of our listeners' Sunday morning church experience, right?
Yeah, we have, most of our locations have three services in a day, 9/11/1. Like I said, we serve about 12,000 to 15,000 people, depending on who's counting. And
who's counting?
The pastor, we're going to go for 15,000.
Right.
We have to think of all the things that most traditional churches think of, and we have to think on a large scale. We're creating things for our online audience. We have our largest campus can easily have 12,000 people coming through in a weekend. So, it's like emptying out a stadium every Sunday and having to think about that experience. So it's all new territory for us to be wearing multiple hats like this because we weren't thinking of this 10 years ago by any means. So.
Right. Right. Yeah. So you guys, I know you're doing multi-site, right? So some churches, the way they may do that is they may say, okay, well, we're going to go plant a church that's separate from us, or we're going to go plant a campus. So what did that initially look like for you guys? Were you just like, hey, we're going to go plant other churches, and we weren't really planning the multi-site thing? Or did the multi-site thing, oh, that's what we need to do? You know what I'm saying?
I think until recently, I think now everyone goes into it thinking I'm going to do multi-site. But I think up until recently, everyone stumbled into multi-site. I don't think anyone intentionally was it was like, oops, we're multi-site. We're going to have to do this because this happened. So for us, it was out of our four campuses, one was the original plant, started a living room with six people 33 years ago. The second one was a merger that is now actually a mega church in and of itself. There's about 3,000 people at that location.
Right.
Then we did a traditional church plant in Midtown about 5 years ago. My timing may be off, so if the Midtown campus pastor is listening, I apologize. and then recently we had an independent autonomous church plant 17 years ago in the Marietta, North Cobb area that recently, due to a tragic loss where the founding pastor passed away. Before he did, he asked if they could come back in as a campus. And so we actually have done kind of all the different models. So we've had a couple of different mergers, some autonomous plants, traditional plant. So we're learning by fire in all environments.
So you're the lead pastor over house churches, which is And this is what's, let's talk about that for a minute, because we're not talking about the lead pastor over small groups.
No.
Right.
That guy's office is right next to mine.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk about that difference. Yeah. You guys are not just saying, hey, we have small groups and we're calling them house churches. You're actually, there's actually a distinctive difference.
Yeah. The way I've explained it to our church, because we're in the season right now where education is probably one of the biggest pieces of educating the congregation of what does that mean, especially when you have people who've been in church world for a long time who associate certain labels certain ways. So I've been I've been in house churches that were just real cuckoo, we're a house church because no one else will let us in. I've been in those kind of house churches. I've also been in ones that are super missional, micro churches now got its own label. Simple church, organic church, whatever you want to call it. And then you have just as many names for small groups. But for Victory's purpose, the way that we have chosen to define the two differences is any church can have small groups within it. It's a smaller group. So to me, small groups are for discipleship, community, We currently have interest-based discipleship groups. We have stage of life. You know, that you name all the categories. We got small groups for them, sports teams. And that is absolutely the way the majority of people within our church find community is through a small group. Yeah. The reason why we decided to do house churches, in addition to the God dream that I mentioned that Pastor Johnson Bowie got, for us, we had this revelation that the majority of traditional churches are pursuing the same group of people. And I believe it was the Barna survey statistics show 40% of Americans have said that they would attend church if invited, but 60% of Americans have said, I'm not interested in attending church. And right. So yeah. An invitation really isn't going to change it. I don't care how attractional you are. You have the best events, best greeters, best buildings. You think of it. It's not going to make a difference. I don't want to go to church. So yeah. We said, like, well, all the churches are fighting for the same 40% of people, and that's great. We need to do that. That's our mission. We should. But who's going after the 60% who said, no, I don't want what you're offering? Mm-hmm. And to those people, the only way you're going to reach them is going to them. They're not coming to you. Yep. And that was why we called house churches. So if small groups are our come and see, then house churches are go and tell.
Gotcha.
And our heart for that is to see, I mean, my heart, honestly, was I'd love to see the entire church see themselves as nothing but pastors and missionaries.
Yep.
And everyone comes in on Sunday, gets equipped, and then goes back to their neighborhoods as sent missionaries and pastors to reach their own community. And so that was really the idea, the heart behind house churches for us was evangelistic, missional outreach. In fact, what we said is, they said, well, can I just turn my small group into a house church? And we would tell them, no, you can't, because there's too many Christians in it, and they're going to run it. So we say, you know, if you want to reach people, you're going to have to make room for them, first of all. And who wants to be the one person coming into somebody else's club? You know, like, it's a room full of Christians. I don't feel like I belong in here. So we would say you need to find out who's on mission with you for your community, for your neighborhood. They can go with you. Everybody else has to stay. So that's kind of the way we're going into house churches. House churches are not for Christians. They're planted, they're for planting the gospel in neighborhoods, seeing spiritual families formed, and hopefully we'll see churches emerge out of that.
Yeah. So you guys, go ahead. Real quick, let me do this. You guys have three pillars or three expectations, right, for those churches. They're going to have – can you explain those to me? You and I were talking about that.
What we've said is the three elements for us.
Yeah, three elements.
This is not original content. I've seen this over and over again.
Yeah.
Some people have articulated really well is Kansas City Underground, Tampa Underground.
Yeah.
But, you know, the three irreducible minimums for any church are mission, worship, and community. And you can call it different things, but when you take away everything else, that's what's left over.
Right.
And take away one of those three, it's no longer a church. And so people tend to gravitate and focus on the worship piece, the community piece more, especially in the American church these days. And what we've said is that the foundation has to be mission. Mm-hmm. That the mission isn't something that God gave the church. The church was created for the mission.
Right.
And so... that's what drives everything. And then we know the community is kind of sort of the attractive piece. It's the bait. It's what keeps you coming back. And the third domino to fall over is worship. So when I see people on mission, I see what community, biblical, godly community looks like, and I experience what that looks like. I experience the gospel. Then my response is worship, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's the way we've built it. We've said, if you build your house church trying to lead with worship, I don't believe you'll accomplish the mission. I think that'll be the leftovers. So I think you have to start with the mission, and you end up in worship.
Yeah.
So the distinctive of your house churches versus your small groups, right? They're out in the community looking for people who aren't going to come to a small group, aren't going to come to a Sunday morning worship gathering, right?
Yeah. But,
so that's the target. That's the purpose. Are you seeing a lot of crossover, like people who are house church leaders and are still plugged into a small group, still coming on a Sunday morning occasionally, or is it really becoming kind of a separate movement of people?
It's kind of funny. You know, one of the biggest question that potential house church planners would ask is, do I have to give up my church? Do I have to give up my campus? My family's plugged in. My kids love all the programs. And we would tell them, absolutely. It's so funny that was their first question, because my first question is, what do I do about the kids? That was my first question. But, you know, theirs is, do I have to give up my church? And to that, we would say, absolutely not. You do not have to give up. First of all, your house church can meet at any day and time.
Right.
Second of all, if you still want to come in, you're still part of Victory. So you can come and enjoy the programs, go to the events, go to the weekend services. I've even encouraged a lot of house church leaders to take off 1 week a month, like, so you can either rest or go back to a campus or whatever you want to do to have a healthy rhythm. I think what I'm going to end up seeing is that they're going to less and less come back to the campus as the community is more and more established. Mm-hmm. But you don't want to tell people that they can't do that. So right. I'd rather that be their choice. And then a lot of the questions people ask is your end goal for the people in the house church to be converted to attending a campus? And the answer is no. Like, first of all, I'd be surprised if anybody wanted to do that. I think once you've experienced that kind of intimacy and community that you're not going to want to give that up. But, you know, if someone wants to, they're more than welcome to. I'd just be surprised to see it. So the other part is we're just telling them, like, we want to support you. We want our campuses to basically function as house church planting hubs. Mm-hmm. And so this is, think of yourself as being an outpost in the frontier, and this is the fort. You come back here, you get refueled, resupplied, ministered to. We have seen some house church leaders that still stay in a small group because they want to have community they can come back to personally. And I think that's healthy. We're also learning that in the future, we want to try to figure out how not to plant house churches alone. Like, let them always have another household or two with them to do it, because just so they have support, accountability. It feels like it's not them versus the world. The same way you would with any kind of church planting team. But we're trying to tell them too. The reason why we haven't focused on that is because we wanted to tell them to focus on planting the gospel initially. Don't focus on trying to plant a church. If you focus on planting a church, you may or may not plant the gospel. But if you plant a gospel, you will get a church.
Well, that's great. that's I think one of the things that, because of our American culture, we've been able to do a little bit. We've been able, because you, when you're talking about a lot of people who basically years ago and generations past, that there's at least some biblical basis, you can kind of go in, plant church, and then begin to make disciples, right? But with the change culturally, as we're, I think as we see that 60% and growing percentage, we really have to go back to almost what seems weird, but it is actually kind of how the New Testament, or how the way the Great Commission works. It's like, go make disciples, and church becomes the byproduct sort of as they gather together versus going and establishing. And that's really, when you, we're talking about synergy between us at Global City and you guys, you know, that's really our philosophy too, is we want to go into a community, take the gospel centered around, gather people around scripture. You know, we're really looking at the end of the day, we want to make disciples, like obedient followers of Jesus, versus, you know, really trying to just gather people to gather them. So I was thinking, one of the things, a couple of thoughts I wanted to kind of touch on here was, one of the things that you is, what are you guys doing for leadership development? Because I know there's some guys out there who are like, well, what about those leaders? How do you encourage those leaders? Do they meet regularly as a leadership team? Do you do that like once a month or once a quarter? Do you have anything like that?
Well, I think one of the advantages of being a traditional model church is there was already some infrastructure built in.
Right.
So for instance, every house church leader has to go through our leadership program to lead anything in the church, you know, statement of faith, here's the heart and vision, membership, background check, all that stuff to initially go through. And then we do a house church leader initial training. I call it like a kind of a missionaries orientation. Mm-hmm. And we're still so new that that's changing. So the first class that we planted and sent out was about, we launched 45 leaders at one time. Mm-hmm. And we met once a month to train for 4 months. Mm-hmm. We're getting ready to launch another group after Easter, probably of about 20, 25 leaders. And for that one, we're going to do once a week for 8 weeks, and they're completely different formula.
Yeah.
And I'll probably try a different one in the fall because we haven't figured out exactly yet. Which one, like, you know, see which one goes the furthest and the farthest. I don't know, but, you know, was that always reforming? Reformed and always reforming.
Yeah. So,
I'm not saying we're reformed, but we're always reforming. So,
yeah.
But So we're constantly kind of exploring to see what's the best method here. Where is our current training lacking? But some of the things that we're building right now, because you guys are, I mean, we literally launched this in January. So to say that we've got it figured out would be foolish. But we are working on quarterly gatherings with the network. Some of those will be hybrid. Some of those will be in person. Some will be just online, depending on, because we've got leaders in different states and different countries as well. And, you know, trying to negotiate time zones and figure out all that. And then once a year, we'll do an annual event where we encourage our leaders to fly in, come in from out of country, out of state. Let's get together and let's minister to the entire network. Kind of like an Oasis weekend where you're just refilling, getting filled up. The quarterly events are more for development, and we'll probably pick a theme or topic every quarter. We've also distributed our house churches into cohorts, similar model as you might do with small groups with coaches. Mm-hmm. And they have, you know, at least bi-weekly interactions with their coaches, and then a monthly gathering with just their cohort. And again, probably online, some in person, depends on where their cohort is scattered. So there's the cohort gatherings monthly, the networks quarterly, and then, you know, everybody coming into person annually is what we're doing. We're also working on doing a podcast like you guys are doing right here. Kind of like these fireside chats every week of don't quit, keep going. fight, that kind of thing, because we know it can be isolated, lonely work. Any church planner or pastor will tell you that. And so we want them to remember, because the lure of coming back to your traditional church is going to be tempting a lot. Because when I walk into the building, I'm the consumer. I'm getting served. So my kids have everything, I have everything, and I don't have to give anything. And this, as I'm going out playing the gospel, it's on me. Like, if I don't go out there and do it, it's not going to happen. Yeah. And what we've said is, like, the church can't reach your neighborhood. It has to be you. It's also not that hard. What we've told people is, like, don't make it complex.
Yeah.
I won't say it's not that hard. It's not that complex.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so for us, you know, some of the leadership development stuff we've leaned heavily on Dave Ferguson. His book, Hero Maker, really inspired a lot of this for us. Also, him and his brother's book, Bless, John Ferguson, Dave Ferguson. That acronym is not one they created, but it's such a simple, powerful concept. I've told our house church leaders, if you don't listen to anything else we tell you, if you read this book and go do it, you're like 90% there. I mean, the mess of shepherding people is something you'll be learning the rest of your life.
Yeah.
So we're not going to try to put that into a training. It's just don't quit learning. But as far as reaching your neighbors, just be a good neighbor. Love people, you know, like serve them, bless them. So if you've never read that book, heard it, whatever, highly recommend it more than anything else. And there's a lot of great books out there, but it's such a simple, compact. If you read this and do it, you literally will transform your neighborhood. So
we'll link that, and I think we can link that in the description. I think that's great.
I'll throw that in the description. I just heard about that one this year at Exponential for the first time, which I don't think it's that new of a book, but like it definitely
it was either 2020 or 2022. So they've been kind of talking about it for a while, but I don't think they published it. I mean, because I think Michael Frost did Bell's thing, which is very similar in his book. Some years back. And so the concept's not new, but I think this book just rolled out, and there are many books like it, but this one is mine, as we say. So I'm enjoying it. It's every one of our leaders has said it's really helped them.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Speaking of Exponential, you and Chris were there together. So I've talked a little bit with Chris about it. We haven't had a huge in-depth deep dive into it, but kind of what were some of your takeaways? What did you, as you were looking at that, looking at your church, what were some things that stood out to you?
Well, the thing this year was evangelism, which was really what I think encouraged our team to go.
Yeah.
Our missions pastor, online campus pastor, all that stuff. What I noticed, and I don't know if this is what was happening across the entire conference or just what God was placing in front of us, was it seemed like I kept speaking to a lot of pastors that were transforming from a multi-site campus model to a network model. It seemed like they were releasing their campuses to be independent churches, same name or at least same mission values and an opt-in network, you know, that as long as we're on the same page. And I think that some of that is we're seeing just the popularity, the rise of networks, networks, the new denominations.
Yeah.
Networks of networks is a big concept that Exponential is constantly pushing, and realizing that for us to really be autonomous, and I feel like even a more biblical model, is to release as many people as possible to lead and to lead in their context. And through fellowship, through collaboration, that's what binds us versus necessarily just planning more locations. I think when you bottleneck things a little bit, when you do that, I can tell you that a lot of our systems get strained with the amount of locations, and we're probably going to plant more campuses. And so we have to be thinking about, is this the long-term model, or do we need to change it? And I have no idea. I can't speak for us that way, but that was something that I saw a lot of church leaders beginning to do around the world. So that was interesting for me. The other trend that I noticed was entrepreneurial church planning. I just seen a lot of people begin to talk about not following a traditional model for planning churches, but planting a business and then planning a church out of the business.
Yeah.
So I saw a lot of different forms and formats for that. People, you know, opening up coffee shops and trying to figure out how can we come into the community, serve the community well, meet them through the services we provide, and then secondarily introduce them to the faith and the community we have instead of the other way around. So now, historically, in the last few years, you've seen a lot of churches plant coffee shops and things like that, which is great. I think that's super effective. But now we're beginning to see them reverse the order of this. And Hugh Halter in Colorado is a big advocate for that as well. And there's some other voices that are really speaking about that.
You know, that's interesting you bring that up too, because that's once again, I don't, you know, chicken or the egg, I don't know. But this is once again one of those things that I know that missionaries, again, have been trying to do. I think Team Expansion is an organization that does something similar, where they're going into places where they can't go in as quote-unquote missionaries, but they can go in as a business, right? And I know that several schools have actually shifted to do like offering degrees that are like mission as business or business as mission. Mm-hmm. So I think that's awesome. I think that's fantastic. I think especially one of the things that we've touched on a lot internally, and we've even talked about on this podcast, is the bivocational sort of thing. But what's interesting about that to me is it's like, you may call it bivocational, but it's really, it's not at the same time. It's very unique because I do this coffee shop because I'm a pastor and I want to reach people for Jesus. Yeah, it makes money, but that's just paying the bills and keep the lights on so that we can actually have gospel conversations as we sit around.
Around with terms, right? Like we've talked about bivocational, we've talked about co-vocational, we've talked about vocational diversity, and I don't know where we'll land. I don't know if we'll ever land, because that's not really the kind of organization we are, but you know, trying to find that balance of saying that this is another way to get there, another way to get it done. And I think like one of the networks that I've been a part of on and off for a decade or so, one of our church planters in South Africa, he actually, you know, he went into his startup, his church plant, as a leadership coach, as a leadership, you know, expert, so to speak. And he actually got opportunity and invitation to speak with the local government and begin to, you know, and like what church planner is walking into their city, and especially in like in a place like Atlanta, there's churches on every corner. What church planner has a seat at the table in any sort of, especially a new startup church planner who isn't the pastor of a mega church, but like is just getting going. But you roll in with a business model and like you might be the business that actually like is beginning to shape community. So that's interesting. I did not have those conversations. I did see a lot of that bivocational kind of, you know, but I didn't have a lot of those conversations at Exponential this year, but it's good to hear that it was there.
Well, I mean, you know, maybe we just see what we want to see. Maybe that was me just seeing what I want to see, because I think we love labels, you know, in America for sure. We want to put everything in a neat box. I think it actually disrupts ministry horribly. I heard someone say, again, I can't remember where I get these things from, but if you're under 38, considering going into full-time vocational ministry, you need to go ahead and go into it with a bivocational model. And I grew up, again, parents were in the ministry. Everything had its neat categories, defined lines, but I really think that separating sacred and secular has really hurt the church, that the church is supposed to be in every space.
Yep.
And I mean, if you think about it, like if you were able to plant a church as a business first, you're providing jobs for the community. You're getting a witness within your own environment. You're meeting the needs of the community. So you're not having to go figure out how to let people know that you're a church. They're coming to you already. And then they, and because they like you, they like what you're doing, then they care about the fact that you have a faith community meeting in there. And there's a church in the business. But, you know, that changes your advertising. It changes the fact that when you're trying to figure out how to serve your community, your business is doing that already. You don't have to run an attractional model church of having big staffs, big buildings, big programs to get people there because they're already coming to your business. And then the word of mouth is they're engaging with you and they're hearing about that. So you can get as creative as you possibly can, which to me really reflects a creative God who is constantly creating. And so we really want the church to flourish. We have to introduce new expressions of the church. And this represents what's happening in culture. I mean, you're seeing a lot of younger millennials and Gen Zers who are working two or three jobs and they like it and they don't want to stop doing that.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's becoming the norm. So why wouldn't it happen in the church?
Right. Yeah. And I think what you touched on there, because again, we've talked about Gen Z before and about that sort of, they want that sort of a flexibility. They want to work a couple of different jobs. But I think one of the things you're touching on that I really love too is just that that creativity and that ability to think and try something. And that I think is as leaders who've been in ministry for a long time, you know, Chris and I know you know, we've been in ministry for 20 years plus. And I know guys, you know, who are 30 years plus, where we need to come alongside is we need to give room for some of this expression, like come alongside some of these and go, that sounds like a really neat idea. Let's see if it works. Let's try it. And that's one of the things that I think is really neat about what you guys are doing at Victory is because, again, you can look at the model and you can be so bought into this is the way church has been done for decades. We're going to keep doing it this way for decades. You know, we're going to keep throwing the same thing against the wall and we're going to hope that it sticks. But they're saying, you know what? Let's give ourselves some room to try. Right. Let's try it. Let's expand. Let's be creative. And there's room for that. And I think that's really, too, a big lesson for churches that may be listening is open up and get, do we have the room to try something unique? Do we have the room to let young leaders try something? Right.
Yeah.
And this is where, you know, one of the things in our ministry we talk about is being principle driven over method driven, right? So here's the principle, the method we're willing to sort of talk about.
Yeah.
And again, that goes back to that. I think for existing leaders, like we, as leaders of a church, let's for instance, like here are the principles, guys. Here's the sandbox. I think we should probably play in a little bit to make sure we're not like off in heresy, but let's go have fun. Let's give them the room to try different methodology that out there. And, you know, maybe your next church plant is not the brick and mortar. Maybe your church, in that sense, maybe your next church plant is this kid's going to go and we're going to help him start a coffee shop or a bookstore or this consulting business kind of approach, right?
Yeah, I mean, our big thing has been, and we don't want to have to pick one model. We're still keeping our original model as well. To your point, we're trying to think of it in different ways. And it's challenging for us because our labels are still the same old labels. So like technically I'm a campus pastor, but I have no building and no operations budget. So my campus is other people's houses, you know, but they're and meeting lots in of businesses. Them, right?
I'm trying to think. Probably some HR guy right now is trying to like figure out the chart in his head. Like how does organizationally
position? That is my goal. Is if I can confuse the rest of the staff about who I am and what I do all the time, then I'm winning. Like if you can put me in a box, I probably am doing something wrong.
That's awesome. So you did your first launch in January. I think you said you got another group that's coming up here soon. Yeah. You're getting ready to launch another wave. When you look 3 to 5 years out, you know, assuming God doesn't shuffle you into yet another role at Victory, but you know, what do you see? Like, what are you hoping for with this house church, kind of initiative that you've got going here?
Well, you guys, I mean, so I'm kind of an open book. I'll share what's in the heart, even if leadership team doesn't have it heard it yet, because that's just how I am.
It's okay, so, we're recording. Like, it'll be you out for everybody.
Victory, you heard it here first. You know, I want to see as many people out of the bleachers as possible. Mm. You know, I remember playing football in school. It's fun to be on the field. I didn't enjoy it as much when I had to sit on the bench. And I think that's the gospel we're called into, is that everybody gets to play. It's not just a certain amount of people. So I want to see the priesthood or the pastorhood of every believer reinstated. Mm-hmm. I want to diminish that gap. I think anybody and everybody can plan a house church. I tell people, you have to convince me to say no to you. Like, you have to come up with a good reason why I'm like, oh, no, you shouldn't do this, because I can't think of them very well. We've had leaders come to us, and some of my other leaders would be like, hey, man, that guy is not ready. I'm like, he's going to get discipled better in this training than anywhere else in the church. Absolutely. Yeah. Let him into the program. He's going to experience the gospel firsthand and see what happens when changes lives. I can't think of a better place for him to be. Yeah. I look at Jesus healing people and sending them right back to their village the same day. Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. So to me, because I have a lot of friends who will, you know, they're on the fivefold ministry, they're going to shepherd and guard the church better. I'm more probably towards the apostolic. Yeah. I'm like, let's set some stuff on fire. Somebody.
Or it was meant to burn, right? Like, right. Y'all put it out, it was meant to burn.
But they'll be like, you know, what about heresy? And I'll say on any given church, on any given day, as much as we think we never speak heresy, probably all of us do at some point in our career. And the older we get, we look back and be like, oh, that was wrong. So. Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of arrogant when we think that we don't, but the house churches will. What I've kind of argued is, it's the Holy Spirit's gospel, and it's his job to guard it, not mine. I'm not the new crusader, so I don't need to protect Jesus. I don't need to protect the gospel. He can handle it himself. I'm going to try to be faithful and steward it well. I'm going to put it in the hands of people where it's doing some damage to the enemy. And so if I'm out on the front lines doing what the gospel was made to do, I feel better about that than keeping it safe. And in the rear, away from the front, away from the fighting. So I want to see house churches multiply. I'd love to see this thing get away from us, where people don't know that they were even planted through victory. And then not be able to, you know, figure out how they got started. I'd also like to see us move both ways. I'd like to see house churches happening that don't know what to call themselves. And I'd like to see some house churches turn into traditional church plants that run house church networks. And I think the church is in its healthiest expression when as many expressions of the church are being expressed. So
that's awesome.
You know, that would be my long-term plan. I'd love to see this turn into a network where even people who don't call Victory home can still say, you know, these are my people and I love what they're doing and I want to take advantage of some of that. So,
yeah, that's awesome, man. Hey, so, I could sit here and talk for hours. So, I'm excited. I want to thank you, man, for taking your time and hanging out with us, and sharing just a little bit of what you guys are doing. I just want to highlight this too. I appreciate your candor, man, because we talked about this before we started recording, but man, you guys, one of the first things I noticed when we were first sort of talking was, you were very quick to say, I don't have all the answers. I don't have this perfectly figured out. This is not where, you know, we've got it perfected. You guys, you're trying something new. You're trying to still find that right thing. And I think that's another fantastic truth that for a lot of churches, like, you don't need it perfectly packaged. And honestly, I'm saying that to myself because I'm one of those. I catch myself in that perfection loop of, wow, when I get it perfect, it'll be ready. But taking that step and being willing to try it, even if you don't right now have all the answers figured out, even and being okay with changing the direction. And I just, the other big thing I want to just say is I am so happy to see a church that is taking seriously the priesthood, because again, we can build and live on a model of, look at what I can do. You know, and there's a lot of us, whether we recognize it or not, there's ways that the enemy gets us as leaders to say, well, if that happens, I lose my importance. But that's not true, right? That's not really true. And so to release that authority to release that opportunity is huge, especially in a church your size. To lead in the way of that, I want to just say thank you to you guys, and I hope a lot of churches can maybe fall in that same direction. So, before we wrap up, man, is there anything else that we didn't say, or you were like, man, I just really want you guys to hear this?
I would just encourage anyone who's even interested in this, start reading about it. I read tons and tons of books. I feel like I got a master's in house churches and I didn't even go to school. just start reading everything I did, consuming as much information to see different styles and the way people did it. Like you just said, Joey, we're still figuring out so much. We're streaming services. Eventually, I'd love to see us get into some different ways of worship gatherings as well. We're trying to teach them how to do discovery Bible studies, acknowledging the fact that this is a long road, especially if you don't already know your neighbors, that it's not I opened up my door, people just flood in kind of thing. This is a lifestyle of living like a missionary. But how can you not do it? My question is, if not this, I'm open to something different. Tell me what that is. But we have neighbors around us that do not know us. One day we're going to see them in heaven. They're going to, you know, or we won't. And they're going to wonder why we didn't do anything, you know, why we didn't tell them. And, you know, we were so focused on our own experience, our own church, our own community, that we just let people burn. And I'm like, I don't really know what else, like, what other option is there? We have to do something, right? So I would rather get it a little bit messy and know that we're at the heart of what Jesus came to do. And I think that there'll be some grace there and some direction and guidance to figure it out.
Yeah.
Because we're basically giving it back to him and saying, you're in charge. It's yours anyway. We're going to do our best to try to hear what that is and follow you. But I'd rather be on the side of obedience and be messy than on the side of disobedience.
You know? Absolutely.
Or limited obedience or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
I'm like, let's just dive into it and let's learn some things while we go. So
awesome, man. I can't thank you enough for spending time with Chris and I today. I look forward to having you back on again. We can dive into some other things. And as you guys learn, it'd be great to have you back on and say, hey, let me tell you the five things that didn't work. Okay. so I'll just save you. I'll save you some pain right now.
Yeah.
And so I appreciate you taking time to share with us. Listen, that's going to do it for us today. That's another episode of the GCMI podcast. You can always go to our website, globalcitymission.org, to stay up to date on all of our podcasts, or you can feel free to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. So thanks a lot, guys, for being with us today. And we will see you on the next one. Bye.